There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Two Off the First. It is May the 9th, 2023. I'm Ryan Balaji. Good to have you with us. We are presented by friends at Swannies. We're at Swannies Apparel on the show for the first time. If you're watching this, if you're just listening to it, well, imagine me wearing a gray golf shirt. And that's what I'm wearing. I got a little floral print on today. This is made of Reprieve fabric. It's the recycled fabric that comes from different plastic recycled materials. Feels great. Looks great. Very excited to be wearing Swannies on the show. Wore playing golf yesterday. Had a lovely round. Felt very comfortable. So we'll keep telling you about Swannies over the rest of this year. Now, we got two stories to talk about today on the show. One relates to the LIV DP World Tour ongoing drama. Seems like there's going to be a next stage that we kind of talked about in the set of fines and news that are going to come out from the DP World Tour relating to players that went to LIV or that played in some portion of LIV events last year. That's going to lead to probably several players resigning their membership, and those are going to be some major championship winners. We'll talk about that. Then we'll talk about what's going on with the Tiger Woods, Erica Hermann thing. We haven't really talked about that on this show before. Now that there are legal proceedings or about to head to arbitration proceedings, that we want to talk about that a little bit, just because now that that's kind of out in the open, it seems like there's maybe a better establishment of facts than just kind of conjecture. Or at least a competing set of facts on public record that we can talk about. So we will talk about that in the second half of the show. Let's start with the DP World Tour drama. Talked about this last week, that the DP World Tour had finally decided it was going to act on the players who had played in the first LIV event last year, last June, at Centurion Club outside of London. And they were going to penalize the players that had DP World Tour membership that went and played that event without authorization from the DP World Tour, a competing event release, which is the equivalent on the PGA Tour. They have a competing tournament regulation, basically, same concept, that if you're going to go play a different tour, then you need approval from your home tour, your main tour, to be able to go do that. And these players that went to LIV were not authorized to do so, and as part of your contract as being a member of really any major tour, but the DP World Tour in this case, then you're violating the rules, you're subject to sanction, which could mean suspension, that could mean fines. And at the time, the DP World Tour said, well, you can't play the Scottish Open, that's a co-sanctioned event with the PGA Tour. Then that set off a whole storm, because then there was an arbitration hearing, emergency arbitration hearing, that led to an injunction that allowed these players to play into early this year. Then there was the full hearing. Well, the DP World Tour won, and the arbitration board from Sports Resolution, the panel basically announced, hey, you know, you guys are allowed to penalize these players under your rules. You're not doing anything out of the ordinary. And the DP World Tour said, well, you know, we'll get around to that. Well, let the Masters happen. And now they're doing the penalizing. The first wave of penalties was a £100,000 fine to 17 players who went and played that first event. 16 of the 17 paid. Sergio Garcia didn't. Four players resigned their membership. Sergio, Richard Bland, Ian Poulter, Lee Westwood, all over the whole thing. Now, to their credit, Bland, Poulter, and Westwood paid the fine and then walked out the door. Well, what about the other people? Because there's a whole lot of other action that could come from the DP World Tour as a result of players like Graham McDowell, Martin Keimer, Henrik Stenson maintaining DP World Tour membership while they went and played LIV events, or they joined LIV, or what have you. So now it comes out from Jamie Corrigan, depending on how well you know him, that he, at the Telegraph, that there's going to be a bigger fine, bigger set of fines coming to these players, and that fine could be in the area of £500,000. So five times that number. Now, we talked about this when we talked about, I believe we did, when we talked about the £100,000 fine. Would this just be a cumulative thing? Like every event that you played, you got another £100,000 fine added on. And at what point would they stop? And I get the sense that they may have kind of capped this thing and just decided, look, how much can we get for the LIV guys? How much are we going to get them to pay? Because they're not going to be real members anymore. They're not going to play, and we're going to keep them out. So how much are they basically able to pay before they do pull Sergio and walk away and say they're not going to pay, which, by the way, they can take Sergio to court and make him pay. So that might be a whole other thing. But in the meanwhile, you've got, like I said, Stenson, Keimer, McDowell, guys who are all gone to live and frankly are all past the kind of sell-by date. And now you've got the DP World Tour willing to come out and say, yeah, we're going to hike you with a hefty fine here, at least for that. And that's the number put out by Corrigan. But ultimately, could be higher, could be lower. But Jamie's usually right on this kind of stuff. He doesn't miss too often. So we're looking at, you know, a $500,000 fine. That's a lot. That's an extraordinary amount in golf. I've never heard of such a thing. And it amounts to probably dead last-ish in 4 to 5 live events. And I don't think that really means a whole lot in the grand scheme of things to the guys that I've mentioned, the ones that have resigned their membership, the ones that haven't. But it is the principle. Because if you continue to play on live and you continue to get fined every time you play because you're a DP World Tour member competing in an event you're not allowed to play in, well, that adds up pretty quickly. And it's not like any of these guys I just named are crushing it out there on live. I mean, Richard Bland's had some okay starts, some really nice finishes, but I don't feel like the other guys have played particularly well. Westwood showed up here and there. The others, not so much. Stenson won an event. Obviously, that was a great thing for his pocketbook. But the other guys have not been playing particularly well, but they're still obviously collecting money per start, and they also collected in advance when they signed with LIV. So the DP World Tour is not like, they're not bankrupting the guys for going to LIV. They're trying to kind of claw back some of the embarrassment, I guess, in terms of finances instead of reputation. And that's going to happen. I think this is probably step 3 in a maybe... I don't think they're ever going to get to like a step 5 of like a ban. Like, they're going to give these guys every opportunity to say they're going to resign, or, and they're not, the alternative would be to say, oh, well, you know, we're going to walk away from LIV. That's not happening. They've got contracts that, as far as we've been told, are pretty ironclad in terms of participation. I've seen several player agreements, player participation agreements, that basically they give you no choice. As a player in what you play. You agree to play every LIV event, whatever that is. Not like, oh, we agreed to 8, as some of the players said earlier in the year, or, oh, we agreed to 10. No, you play exactly the LIV events when they tell you where it is, and you do it. And you have to make every good faith effort to play that event unless you are injured or incapacitated. And that agreement doesn't really exist for DP World Tour players or PGA Tour players. It's just not the way it works. You agree to play a certain number of events to maintain your membership, either tour, but that's the extent of it. The agreement doesn't go beyond that for a basic membership. For the players on the PGA Tour taking player impact program money, then yes, you agreed to play every event, but one you could skip that's a designated event. And if you didn't, then you could cede up to 25% of that player impact program money. And that's just for this year. Going forward, that won't exist. And the player impact program goes back to $50 million instead of $100 million. So this is kind of a public relations thing. I think this is kind of a, hey, you turned your back on us. Now we're going to get you a little bit, and we're going to embarrass you a little bit in public kind of thing. A little tit for tat. And that's not entirely necessary. I think at this point, the public, general public sentiment about LIV, if you were going to poll people, a 10,000 golf fans, you said, you know, which tour do you, if you, you could ask all kinds of questions, but I think the general sentiment you would get is that people favor traditional golf tours over LIV. And that could be for any variety of reasons. It could be the Saudi money, it could be the format, it could be Greg Norman, it could be the players involved. I mean, there's all kinds of reasons you may or may not like LIV, one way or the other. But the DP World Tour isn't just going to stand there and say, well, these guys left for a better tour, so, or what they perceive to be a better tour because there's guaranteed money, we're just going to take it. Like, that's the same thing the PGA Tour did in saying, well, we're going to permanently suspend, well, not permanently, but uncapped suspension on a player who chooses to go to LIV. And that's why a lot of those guys resigned their membership, because they didn't see the value in continuing to get punished. And by resigning that membership, hopefully someday for them, if the ecosystem allows, or LIV goes away, or whatever happens, they might be able to come back. And they just didn't want to keep it going like that. So it is kind of surprising that these guys, frankly, just kept their membership for as long as they did. And Really, they had to kind of see the arbitration case through, I suppose. But even if they had won, I'm not convinced that they would have just suddenly decided to start playing 6, 10, whatever, European Tour events every year, because you have a 14-event live schedule. You hope to play the four majors. That's 18 tournaments. Most top players play anywhere from 20 to 24 times a year, max. So that's it. I mean, you what, add two or three? You might play your National Open or something like that if that's on the DP World Tour schedule, but that's really the extent of it. And it's kind of ridiculous that it came to this. The DP World Tour players that went to LIV could have said, hey, we're on LIV now. We understand the consequences of our actions. We're out. DP World Tour could have just said quietly, okay, you're out. We'll take your resignation and we'll call it a day. Thank you for what you did to help us with the Ryder Cup. Thank you for building the rivalry with the United States. It's our cash cow. And just kind of, you know, put bygones be bygones and just accept that things were going to have to move forward differently. And we'll see what happens when these announcements are made official and made final. But that's a big fine to levy against anybody. And it even still pales in comparison to what these players made going to LIV and what they're still making playing LIV, either on the individual or the team side. So is what it is, but we move on. All right, let's move on to another really energetic subject, which is the court proceedings around the divorce, well, not divorce, the end of the relationship between Tiger Woods and Erica Herman. So Erica Herman worked for Tiger Woods as, I believe she was the general manager, if I remember right, of Woods' restaurant in Jupiter, Florida. Then they got together. Then they obviously got really together. She moved in. She was there at the Masters when he won in 2019. I mean, she's been a part of his life, I feel like, for, I want to say, 4 or 5 years, like 5 years in total. But they wound up breaking up at some point, I believe in the fall. And now there's a lawsuit between Erica Herman, who's 39, Tiger Woods, who's 47, and the trust that owns Woods' $54 million mansion in Jupiter. And she's suing both, and she's seeking $30 million from the Woods Trust amid what she calls allegations of sexual harassment. And there was a hearing today, a 45-minute hearing in a Florida court. And the judge that was presiding over this, her name is Elizabeth Metzger, appeared, frankly, skeptical of Herman's claims. And her entire goal here is to try to invalidate a non-disclosure agreement that apparently she signed that would require this dispute to be settled by an arbitrator instead of in a lawsuit like this. And Judge Metzger, apparently, according to Golf Channel's reporting, and there was some reporting today from Alex Maselli, who is a lawyer by training, writes for SI, does a lot of kind of legal stuff, really gets into that kind of thing. But I think he was there today in the courtroom in Stuart, Florida. But apparently there was some questioning from Judge Metzger about why this mandatory arbitration clause would not invalidate Herman's lawsuit against Woods, basically saying, hey, you agree to this in the event of a breakup or some other problem, you agree to third-party arbitration. So you, by agreeing to that, should probably not be able to sue Woods and Woods' trust for his home as a result. And she apparently seemed to agree with Woods' attorney, who's named J.B. Murray, that even the question of whether Herman actually signed the document from August 2017 or her signature was forged should now even be left to the arbitrator, which that's kind of an interesting legal view. I mean, Florida's Florida on a lot of different things. That's an interesting legal point of view. I don't know enough about the law to tell you one way or the other if that's weird or not, but that seems pretty interesting to me. Neither Herman nor Woods were present in the hearing, but Metzger is quoted as saying in this Golf Channel piece, quote, contract law tells me, I look at the document and I ask, is it valid on its face? I've got dates, I've got signatures, I've got terms, Metzger said. And based on that, she asked Herman's attorney, whose name is Benjamin Hodas, what choice did she have but otherwise to invalidate this lawsuit Herman has filed and require that Herman then take her case to arbitration if she wants to pursue that. Basically, behind closed doors, not in a public setting, which is precisely why Woods would have someone sign a non-disclosure agreement, that you didn't want any of this out in public, that if you had a dispute, you would have it behind closed doors, behind an arbitrator, that if that ruled against Woods, it would just be paid out quietly, and I'm sure there's a non-disclosure disclosure about any kind of payments that come in this, like if she had won an arbitration hearing for whatever reason, let's say the $30 million, and she got paid that, that she couldn't even talk about it publicly. But now it seems like that's where this is heading. And so in response, Herman's attorney said that he hoped the judge would conduct a future hearing to determine whether his client had even signed the document under duress or that it was forged or what have you. And he did acknowledge that Herman signed a non-disclosure at some point, but said the one presented by Woods' attorney may not be the true contract, which I think is also an equally weird and interesting claim, as though they have forged the document or come up with a different version of it to make it look like she had given away more rights or something like that through the contract. I don't know exactly. I don't have the transcript in front of me of all of this, and Florida courts are kind of hard to get documents unless you were there in person. They make it that way. It's not like the federal court system, where we do a lot of stuff related to like LIV lawsuit against the PGA Tour and the players that are still left. There's like two left. But in that lawsuit, the federal documents that come up, I mean, they're uploaded to a great system. It's really easy to access. It's called Pacer. If you ever want to check it out, you can check out the documents for free if you set up an account and you don't spend like $20 per month or quarter or whatever it is. Very, very reasonable. And you can check out all this stuff yourself. But in the Florida court system, not so easy to do. So anyhow, the end result was HOTUS responding to Metzger and saying, we don't know if this document is real or not. My client cannot say for certain that is her signature, and she does not recall signing this document. End quote. That's a kind of strange claim to make, that maybe she didn't sign this particular piece of paper, which means this was forged. Okay, but she does admit to signing a non-disclosure at some point, so it could be better or worse than the original if she signed it. But why would you have one that's... I don't know. I really don't know. But that seems like a very in-the-weeds legal thing that I guess they're going to try and stem this into another hearing. Because if you lose outright here and Judge Metzger says, hey, you got to go to arbitration, you signed this agreement, I have no reason to believe that this was forged or the document isn't real or anything like that, then that's kind of the end of it. So this is kind of a way, I think, of trying to stay the case, trying to keep it going for whatever reason, try to keep it moving along. And Woods' attorney called this whole bit what it called a bit of a red herring. And Murray said, quote, one thing you did not hear Mr. HOTUS say today is that she did not sign it. They are not bold enough, end quote. Which means he's trying to say, well, she signed it, so tough nuggets, we're going to arbitration. The whole point of this lawsuit is to try to get out of that agreement. And she's trying to get out of that agreement on the basis of basically a law change, I believe in the state of Florida, maybe a federal law. Please don't hold me to that. Again, not a lawyer, and I haven't studied enough on this issue to know exactly what we're talking about as it relates to that law. But that she wants to get out of the agreement because she claims she's a victim of sexual harassment and maybe even sexual assault. And as a result of those claims, that would invalidate the agreement, which would allow her to then sue Woods and to make money. And she also said that she was evicted from their home illegally, and that Woods tricked her by claiming they were going to take a fun weekend getaway, taking her to an airport. Then all of a sudden, she was at the airport, so was Woods' attorney. He left. He tried to coerce her into signing an agreement, some other agreement. She said no, and then here comes all of this. So she argues that the non-disclosure agreement is unenforceable. It is a federal law that says such contracts can be voided when sexual abuse or harassment has occurred. And she alleges in court documents that Woods threatened to fire her from the Woods restaurant if she didn't sign a non-disclosure agreement. Now, I don't know if she remained the general manager of this restaurant that Woods owned and still owns, if that continued or she still held that role while she was with Woods romantically or how that all worked out. I don't know the answer to that. But her attorney did argue that that is a form of harassment by basically saying he's treating one employee, Woods' romantic interest, differently than others because they have a romantic or sexual relationship. And That allegation really apparently wasn't talked about during this hearing, kind of a gateway into the hearing, perhaps. And it feels like a series of kind of tricks from Herman's attorney to try to keep things moving along, like we talked about earlier. But Metzger did say to HOTUS that she needed more information about what allegedly happened to even consider that as a way of kind of getting into the potential breaking of that contract. HOTUS said he couldn't provide more information publicly in fear that he would be violating the non-disclosure agreement himself if it was ultimately upheld. And Murray called those allegations, who's Woods' attorney, quote, utterly meritless. And at the end of the day, I don't know where this is going exactly, but she's trying to get money off of Woods on the claim that if the non-disclosure agreement thing is thrown out and she's unlawfully evicted, as she claims, then how much would it cost to rent a property like the one she's been living in with Woods, which is a beachfront mansion in the north of Palm Beach for 6 years, because she was kicked out without, unduly or illegally. And this is pretty tricky, but the whole end result is, she said they began their romantic relationship in 2015, after Woods hired her in 2014. In late 2016, she moved into Woods' house, which is like 30,000 square feet. And then in 2017, Woods, according to Herman, verbally promised she could live there at least 11 more years, which sounds like a really strange, specific thing to say for a guy like Tiger Woods. Just throwing that out there. I don't know one way or the other whether that happened, but that seems like a very specific claim for 11 years. But Woods, in response in court documents, said that their relationship began in 2017, shortly before she moved in with him in August of that year, when that non-disclosure agreement was apparently signed. And then in March 2017, Woods placed that mansion that he owns into an irrevocable trust, which he created, that has himself as the owner and his two children as the beneficiaries. So probably thinking ahead here, knowing what had happened in the past with, obviously, with Elin Nordegren and a whole lot of stuff that happened there, mortgaging that home to be able to kind of pay a portion of the divorce settlement, that was probably a big deal. Knowing that could come up here, hey, I'm getting romantically involved, I'm going to create this trust so that she wouldn't have access to the home if everything goes south. All of that seems kind of standard issue for someone of Woods' wealth and position in life. Anyhow, where does this all go from here? It sounds like arbitration is where Metzger is going to say this thing is going to kind of go. And we'll see what happens. I guess we'll see what happens. But it does seem like there was some kind of conflict from Herman with herself, really, about this idea that by being and living with Woods, if things went south, then there would be some kind of issue because maybe she doesn't have a job and she'd be romantically entangled. And obviously not, as she said, quote, I don't want to be in my 40s, heartbroken and jobless, as she wrote in an email to Chris Hubman, who is one of Tiger's right-hand men, the head of Tiger Woods Ventures. So I think this is probably going to arbitration, which that's not great news for this lawsuit for Erica Herman, but we shall see and we'll try to keep you updated on it. That's a kind of a complicated subject matter. I try to tend to stay away from those types of things, but at a certain point, once you kind of reach public domain with all of these allegations, and it's just something we kind of have to talk about. So that'll do it for us today. It'll do it for this topic. We may or may not come back to it. I guess we'll see what happens next there. We'll be back on Thursday with another show. Tomorrow I'm going to be out of town. Maybe I'll do a voice-only version of the show, so no video version of the show for those of you who are kind enough to watch us. But we'll be back on Thursday. We'll talk about all kinds of stuff. We'll get the AT&T Byron Nelson underway. I'm sure we'll have some other things to talk about, too. If you catch us as a audio-only podcast and you listen to us through a podcast platform and let you do so, please give us a 5-star review, leave a comment. Helps us reach more people. If you're watching on YouTube, thanks for doing that. Please consider subscribing to our channel, smash that like button, leave a comment, all those good things. And if you're watching or listening through some other fashion, thanks for spending some time of your day with us. We appreciate it. We'll be back on Thursday on video for another edition of 2 at the First. Have a great day, everybody.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
We know what you're thinking. I just want jeans that look great, feel great, and hold up. At Ariat, we've been doing some thinking too. We're thinking about fit that moves with you, no matter where the ride takes you. Durability that stands up to hard work, harder play, and comfort that never quits. And all this thinking, it's really just about more living. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat jeans at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.